Hey, this is Gina Grad.
Hi, this is Teresa Strasser.
Hi, everyone. This is Mike Errico.
Hey there. This is Casey Cavalier.
I'm Rocky Rose.
And you are listening to The Jay Franzi Show.
Lucky you.
Welcome to The Jay Franzi Show, a behind-the-curtain look at the entertainment industry with insights you can't pay for and stories you've never heard. Now, here's your host, Jay Franzi.
Well, hello and welcome to the show. I am Jay Franzi, and this is your backstage pass to the entertainment industry. This week, we get to talk with an award-winning host, an educator, and a coach. We get to talk with Dave Jackson. We'll talk to him about his transition as a host, his thoughts on technology, and we'll take a deep look at his production process. Now, Dave, he's a Hall of Fame podcast host, and I can't wait to talk to him about that tonight. So if you would like to join in, comment, or fire off any questions, please head over to jfranzi.com. Now, let's get started. Dave, sir, how are you?
I'm doing great, Jay.
I am so excited to have you here. I've been waiting for this for a long time.
Oh, absolutely.
So why don't we just dive in?
Sure.
You have started podcasting back in 2005. You are a musician. You are an educator. One of your first shows was The Marketing Musician. Can you tell me how you made that transition from podcasting about music and marketing into podcasting about podcasting?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I don't know if you're a musician, you probably know who Bob Baker is. Back in the day, I still consider him the godfather of music marketing. And I was freaking out because A, he got to come on my show and I was like, but you're Bob Baker. I'm just some guy in the basement. And I was talking to him. I said, well, how did you get started? Like, how did you become this marketing guru? And he said, well, I just kind of took my magic wand and tapped it on my forehead and said, okay, you're a guru. And he said, and this kind of goes back to teaching as well. You just have to know a little more than your students. And so he's a guy that had been in bands growing up. He had written for a couple of magazines and was like, well, I'm going to start a blog and a website about being in bands and marketing your music. And I was like, huh. And at the time I was going back to school. When I got my first degree in electronics, I was a waiter. And I was like, I need a job kind of like that, where I have flexible hours and such, but I need to make a little money on the side. So at the time, a friend of mine had said, hey, I know what the next big thing is going to be. I came back from this big marketing conference and it's podcasting. And I Googled it, and there was 1.5 pages on it. I thought we broke the internet. And everything was saying membership sites are going to be great and podcasting is going to be big. And I thought, well, let's put the chocolate and the peanut butter together and see what happens. And that's when I learned really quick, especially in 2005. If the goal is to make money quickly in podcasting, you might find yourself a little discouraged. So that's why, while I was launching the School of Podcasting, I was also playing in a band regularly and doing guitar lessons and building websites for people. So there were a lot of little side hustles going on as I waited for podcasting to kind of kick into gear. And I'd been teaching at that point for a while. I've always been in the corporate world. I've never taught elementary or anything like that. It's always been in the corporate world. So I already had kind of a teaching background. And I was like, well, I'm a teacher. I might as well teach people about this podcasting thing. So that's how it all got started.
And you have a lot of shows. You've had a lot over time, and you currently have a lot. And I listen to all of them, so I'm a Dave Jackson junkie for sure.
Well, thank you.
But you have shows that vary in format, and it's anything from solo to co-host to interview-style shows. Even your School of Podcasting, which I would consider, and correct me if I'm wrong, your flagship show.
Yeah.
But how do you feel like that show itself has evolved over that time?
Yeah, well, the biggest one for probably, I would say like the first year, there was this stat that went around and we all followed it like, sheep. And that was the average commute in America was 20 minutes. So everybody's podcast was 20 minutes. And then I went to an event and I actually got to meet some people that listened to my show, which also kind of threw me out of my chair. I was like, wait, you listen to my show? And I would ask them, right, what do you like about it? And then I would ask them, what do you wish was different? And they all said the same thing. I wish it was longer. like my commute's about 40 minutes. So I was like, okay. So I always aim at 40 minutes. And I guess the other thing, back then it was just kind of going off the news, but I now hang out a lot in Facebook, in Reddit, in all these different places where podcasters are. And I'm just looking to see what's the biggest itch that people need to scratch on. And so that will give me content. So I'm not really guessing, are people going to be into this topic or not? I still have the occasional one. In fact, my last episode, I was like, this isn't going to work. It was a person that made a tool for Instagram. And I'm like, I'm not a huge Instagram user myself. And I thought this could really land flat if people aren't into Instagram. And I kind of got some, I got some people that were into Instagram that said, this is amazing. And those that weren't were like, yeah, not like, you know, better luck next time, Dave. It wasn't my thing. So I'm not as afraid to try stuff. People always worry about the audience, you know, and I'm like, well, when you first start out, you don't have one. And so I just kind of go with my gut. And that was one. And Jeff's a great guy from Stampede Social. But there was that thing in my gut that's like, I'm not sure if this is a good fit or not. And it wasn't like a horrible fit, but I had some people like, yeah, that wasn't my favorite episode. So I try things, and I guess I rely more on my gut. And in this case, I didn't, but it was a case of, hey, the Super Bowl went into overtime. And that's where I kind of go, well, if I was coaching myself, I always say I'd rather have a late show that was good than an on-time show that was meh. And I was like, yeah, I kind of put out a meh, it was all right kind of show.
I think those type of shows are equally as important. They're still informative, and you're still learning about a tool that's out in the industry, whether it's a tool that you would, you know, find yourself using or not. Somebody in the industry is going to use it. So I still think it's valuable to talk about.
Yeah.
Typically, your flagship show, the School of Podcasting, is a solo show. Do you typically prefer the solo episodes over the interview style?
The thing I like about a solo show, you kind of have to work at it to stay entertaining because it's just one guy rambling on. So I have to kind of consistently like, all right, we got to throw in a joke. We got to throw a curveball here, something to keep people listening. The nice thing about it, there's no scheduling conflicts. There's no guests with bad audio. I don't have to do a bunch of research and listen to four episodes to find out what really makes this person tick. So there's a lot less work into a solo show. So that's the one thing. But on the other hand, you know, it's nice. Like I have somebody coming up in probably a couple of weeks that is a social media person, because that's the question I want answered is, how do I get somebody from TikTok or YouTube or Instagram? How do I get them to listen to my podcast? Is that something that's even possible? Because when I look into that, everybody's like, yeah, it's impossible. And I'm like, okay, well, if it is, let's get a guru on here to say, yeah, there's a better strategy. So it's always the questions that I'm looking for. I work for Libsyn, so I see a lot of the common questions that people ask there. And so I'm always kind of looking like, what does my community need a fix for? And so there's that. But solo shows are easier. Interview shows are great because it's a different point of view that I don't have. And so I'm actually being educated along with my audience. I really love to do what some people call NPR style or narrative style, where I'll interview somebody. I will listen to their answers. I use Hindenburg, and you can just kind of set them aside. And so then I've got all these pieces, and I look at it and go, okay, how can I line these pieces into kind of a story or something? And those always sound amazing. They just take so much more time. So if I could do every interview as a narrative style episode, that would be my way to go. But sometimes it's just like, well, you know, I've got to take my sister to the grocery store. I got things going on. I'm like, we're just going to do this interview the good old-fashioned way. Right? Just a conversation, yeah.
Well, I mean, that's a good point, too, because if you do an interview in that NPR style, you get the opportunity to go and, like you said, craft a story, but you also get the opportunity to look at it after the fact and kind of take a different approach to it. Maybe I could rephrase this question a better way.
Yeah.
You can make a lot of changes that way, and it makes a more polished show.
Yeah.
So I do think there's some value to that. I also know you do co-hosted shows. What's your feeling on those?
They're great. What you want to avoid is Jimmy and Nancy have known each other since kindergarten, and they're bestest buddies. And so they do a movie review show, and they're like, so what did you think, Nancy? And she's like, I liked it. And Jimmy goes, me too. Okay, next movie, I hated it. Me too. Okay, well, one of you is redundant. One of the reasons that Siskel and Ebert, the old movie reviewers back in the 80s, were great is because they were really different. And I always knew that if the bald guy liked the movie, I'm probably going to like it. So we all had our favorites, and that's kind of what you're looking to see. That had a little bit of, I wonder what's going to happen. Are we going to get two thumbs up? Oh, holy cow, that kind of thing. So if you've got the right co-host and some chemistry, they're a lot of fun. You always want to make sure that, because somebody owns the show, unless you have some sort of agreement where we're 50-50 or whatever. At Libsyn, I see a lot of co-hosts gone bad. You know, Ernie and Bert started a show, and Bert's showing up drunk, and he's not doing the social media like he's supposed to, and Ernie's getting really mad. So eventually Ernie logs in and starts deleting files, and it just gets really ugly. So I do a podcast called Ask the Podcast Coach with Jim Cullison. And every January I go, hey, it's time for the awkward conversation. And he'll go, Dave, it's your show. You keep all the money. I'm just here for fun or whatever. And I'm like, okay, if that ever changes, you got to let me know. And that just goes back to the days when I was in a band. I kind of deemed myself the secretary, and I'd be like, okay, we got $150 in the band fund. And they're like, yeah, we had $150 in the band fund last week too. And I'm like, yeah, but you notice we're not arguing about money. Everybody knows what's in the band fund. We know what we spend it on.
Right.
So communication is really the key. But it's a whole different aspect, because if I do a solo show, I'm talking to that one person, my invisible friend across the desk. And I have people tell me, they're like, I feel like you're talking to me. And so if you can, which I'm horrible at, if you kind of occasionally talk to the invisible person at the desk and go, wow, did you hear that? That's amazing. Now they're involved in the conversation versus just listening to two people talk.
So you do the show with Jim where you stream it live to YouTube and then you release it as a podcast. Do you find more people watch it live or listen to the podcast?
Oh, hands down, not even a contest, listen. And the reason for that is I can't watch Ask the Podcast Coach in the car or watch it while I'm doing dishes or walking the dog. And I was just at PodFest and Rob Walsh from Libsyn said the ratio is 15 to 1. I was saying 5 to 1, but he said 15 in terms of listen versus watch. And that's just because there's more opportunity to listen than there is to watch.
No, and that's a good point. And it also brings up the current controversy that's going on of whether or not a show on YouTube is a podcast because it doesn't have an RSS feed.
Yeah.
So could you possibly share your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I just now deem them, there's three things. There's a podcast that is an audio or video file, and I'm just going to, because it's an easy way, it's in Apple. If your show's in Apple, you're probably a podcast. And the reason I pick Apple is they have about 60% of the market. Then there's what I call a YouTube podcast. And that's where you go in and you put a video and you check a box and you dub thee a podcast. I now dub myself a male model. Still not working, but doggone it, I'm a male model.
It works for me, Dave.
Yeah. So that's a YouTube podcast, which means it's going to go into YouTube Music and YouTube, and people will now call it a podcast, even though technically it's not. And then there are actual video podcasts. And that's, again, something that you can find in Apple. So when people go, I'm a video podcast, I go, okay, can I find you an Apple? And they go, no. And I go, you're a YouTuber. And there's nothing wrong with that. Be a YouTuber, doggone it. The thing that makes me upset is every time a new report comes out about podcasting, and every time they say a video podcast on YouTube, I just go, that's a YouTube channel. Like, quit calling it a podcast. Because they'll say, yes, people are finding video podcasts on YouTube. I go, in my brain, that comes across as people are finding YouTubers on YouTube. So I am somewhat the old curmudgeon. I'm not going to die on that hill. I just now, every time stats come out about it, I'm like, well, that's worthless. And I always use the analogy of country music. You know, country music was not the top genre by any means when I was growing up. But then all of a sudden, country music now sounds like AC/DC with a banjo. And lo and behold, it sounds like pop, and it's the number one genre that's selling. In fact, all these rock guys are
popular.
And like, you change the definition of it. So we changed the definition of a podcast, and lo and behold, now the best place to find a, quote, podcast is on YouTube. And I'm like, well, in my brain, that calculates the best place to find a YouTuber is on YouTube. And there's nothing against YouTube. It is the number two search engine, but I'm just like, yeah, so it is what it is.
Yeah. Working in Nashville for so long, we always said that country music was about 10 years behind rock and pop. So what you would hear in rock and pop would then show up in country about 10 years later.
Mm.
Let's go back to Ask the Podcast Coach. It is a call-in show,
yeah,
and it is as much about community as anything else. So can you talk a little bit about the community?
Yeah, it's funny because the reason I have so many shows is many of them are me testing something. So that show started 10 years ago with me testing Blog Talk Radio, and then we moved to Blab, and then we moved to Google something something. Then we went to StreamYard, and now I'm using Ecamm Live. If you're going to do a live show, if you can do it at the same time, whatever your schedule is. So for me, it's every Saturday at 10:30, and my audience knows to go to askthepodcastcoach.com/live, because on occasion I will like, hey, let's try out this new platform, and I always have that slash live pointed wherever we are. And I was going to stop the show. I'd done it for a while, and I was like, okay, Blog Talk Radio is horrible. I think I'm done with this. And the people that were showing up said, wait, 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 hold on. Like, you're like the new Saturday morning cartoons. And I was like, really? Okay. And then I was like, well, I need a reason to get up because I'm I'm burning up my weekend here. So I started a Patreon. I'm like, well, this will be my test of Patreon and playing with crowdfunding. But yeah, it's, you know, Coach Dave and Gary, trying to think of that, DR's there, Kim Craggy's there, you know, a whole bunch of people show up.
Uncle Marv.
Yeah, Uncle Marv. Yeah. And so the beauty of it is why I like that show is I can ask them a question and get feedback. And many an idea has been birthed on Ask the Podcast Coach that then went back in the oven and came back out on the School of Podcasting after I did some research. Live is a different beast. And this is where, again, I'm not afraid to go, let's see what happens, is I actually make the link. Like, if you want to jump into my video on Saturday morning, you can. I've been doing that for 10 years, and I've only had like 1.5 times where somebody came in and did something naughty. And, you know, some people are just weird. One guy came in and just smoked a big old joint and blew smoke into the screen. I'm like, hey, thank you very much.
Have a good
day. You know, but it's fun. I don't get a lot of people doing that. For years, I had all sorts of equipment so I could take phone calls. And I had a phone screening device. You know, I just wanted to be Phil Donahue and go, is the caller there? And we weren't screening calls, but nonetheless, it was all set. And that's when I learned my audience will be more than happy to type their question into a chat box. And I went, yeah, you know, I'm spending a lot of money on this equipment. Nobody's using it. And so you got to do what your audience wants. So they want to use the chat. And I always have a big banner at the top. Just go to askthepodcastcoach.com/question to jump in. And on occasion, we'll get a person that'll hop in. But it's also 10:30 in the morning on the East Coast, and some people aren't ready to be on camera. It is a lot of fun, though.
It is fun, and I do enjoy the community. A lot of times, the community actually has their own show going on.
Oh, absolutely.
Their own conversations and everything.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny. But you mentioned in there that you started because you wanted to test different platforms and different streaming platforms, and you're currently using Ecamm Live. I know you were using StreamYard before that.
Yeah.
Do you have any preferences between the two now that you've used them for a period of time?
It's weird now that I'm I'm doing a show, another show of mine called the Podcast Review Show, and we're going to do that as video. And I was like, you know what? I got a lot of stuff going on with that one in the background. I'm playing clips and all. And I'm like, we're going StreamYard because it's easy. It works. It looks great. And so I always tell people, if you want to get into live streaming, StreamYard is a great way to go. If you're on a Mac and you can handle a little bit of a learning curve, maybe a week or two, because it's one of those things where it does a few more things than StreamYard doesn't. The question is, it's that bright, shiny syndrome. It's like, ooh, it does it. Look, you can change the color on the edge of your video. Okay, well, is that really going to bring in more people?
It does, and, Dave.
So I like it. I like the fact that I have the same link to join every week. Now I could change that if I wanted to, but I don't have to go in and change slash question anymore. But if you're looking for ease of use and yet still powerful, StreamYard's a good way to go. And if you're on a Mac, it is cheaper. That's the nice thing. Ecamm is slightly cheaper, not by much, but it is cheaper than StreamYard. But it is a little, and again, that's one of those things where if you just want a single shot or a double shot, you could set that up and go save, done. But I'm always like, ooh, what if I did this? And then I started integrating it with a Stream Deck, and you end up kind of making things harder than they need to be sometimes. Sometimes all those, you know, different features and stuff, I'm like, do I really need this? You know, so
we won't talk about the toys in front here.
That's right.
But yeah, no, that's a good point. One of the other things to mention, if you're talking about the two platforms, is Ecamm runs locally. It's on your host computer, where StreamYard's internet cloud-based system. Yeah. So it also depends on the power of your host system. Yeah. So you really need a powerful system to run Ecamm, or at least a moderately powerful system.
Yeah. I've got a little Mac Mini, and it's right now at least doing great. And then God bless whoever brought fiber optic into my neighborhood. But AT&T came in and like, we have fiber now. And we're like, sold. They're like, oh, do you want to know how much it is? I go, it really doesn't matter. But
they just put it in my neighborhood here as well.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. I'd like to take a step back here, because now that we've talked about a few of your shows, and your shows primarily, not all, but primarily at this point, are podcast related. So it's podcasting about podcasting. So can you, now that we've established that, tell me what your why is?
Yeah, it's always been, I'm not sure why I have this DNA, but I love to help people. When I was growing up, my dad was a long distance truck driver. This is kind of a psychiatrist kind of thing, but I think it's one of the reasons why I like to help people. But there was some sort of three-legged race where, you know, you tie your legs together, and it was a father-son thing. And I was just sitting on the sidelines thinking, wow, life sucks. Like, I know my dad is out, you know, making the bacon and all that, but I'm like, I'm literally on the sidelines. I'm on the outside looking in. And I just hated that feeling. So anytime somebody goes, oh, I could never podcast, I go, oh, yeah, you probably could. One of my favorite stories is Rosie, something Marsenbaum or something of that nature. But she's in Florida, and she called me up and said, I want you to help me make a podcast, but I'm never going to be able to do it. And by the end of it, she called me crying. Oh, my God, I'm in Apple. I can't believe it. I'm like, yeah, I walked you through that yesterday. And she goes, no, I'm in Apple. And she just couldn't believe she could do it. And that's one of my favorite stories, because there was somebody that was like, there's no way I can do this. You know, I'm on the outside. Everybody else is doing this. It looks cool. And I was able to bring them on the inside. So, and all of them tend to point, like you said, the School of Podcasting is the flagship kind of thing. I have one show called the Podcast Rodeo Show, where I grab a random podcast and see how long we can hang on.
And that is another great show, by the way.
Yeah. And I just, at the end, I'm like, all right, you know, if you need some help, School of Podcasting, ask the podcast coach. The other reason that wouldn't exist is I would have the person that wanted to, you know, hire me to do some consulting, but they couldn't afford me. So again, my heartstring, I want to help everybody. I'm like, well, if you can get up at 10:30 in the morning on Saturday, I'll answer all the questions you have. And that gives me content. So that's another reason why I do that one. The podcast review show is, again, just helping people. But that one, we spend probably 3 or 4 hours going over your show and your website. And I used to do that for free, again, to point people at the School of Podcasting. But there comes a time when you're like, yeah, we got to start charging for that one. That's a little too much time. But they're all about making podcasts good and hopefully pointing people towards my website. Because I have a friend of mine I've known since sixth grade, and he finally started listening to podcasts last year. And he's like, man, I got to tell you. And I go, what? He goes, most of these are really bad. And I go, welcome to podcasting. Yeah. And he said, but I found this one, and it's really, really good. And I was like, yep. You kind of got to go through the needle in the haystacks. And I go, but it's usually pretty obvious when you hit play what you're going to get into.
Right. Yeah. We talked briefly about technology, talking about Ecamm and StreamYard and so forth. And you even mentioned the Stream Deck. Are there any forms of technology you really recommend at this point?
Yeah, just a good mic. The whole, I want to use my earbuds. I want to use the built-in microphone and a laptop. It drives me bonkers that an author will go on a show to promote their book, and they're using either a microphone that's built into the laptop or the dreaded Blue Yeti, and it's set up completely wrong, when you can buy a Samson Q2U for $69.
Right.
And I'm like, come on, get with the program. So that's really where it does start. From there, I just had my birthday was this month, so I bought myself a Vera pole, which is just this big pressure pole that I'm going to hang up in the ceiling and get the lights off my desk and hang them up in the ceiling. But that's not where I started. I started in the base of my brother's house next to a water heater, you know. So it's just one of those things where every now and then, you're like, it'd be kind of cool if I did this. But yeah, definitely start with a mic. You don't have to do video. Video is great. People always say, you must hate YouTube. I'm like, no, I hate to hear the person goes, well, I want to start a podcast. I just don't want to be on video.
Right.
Well, then don't be on video. to start off with audio and get used to making content. And then when you're ready, if you want to, start a YouTube channel.
You mentioned being next to the water heater in your brother's house.
Yeah.
You were going through a hard time at that moment, and you started podcasting and putting a show together. What was going through your mind at that time? I mean, was this just a way to escape, or was this a passion at that point?
Yeah, I'd just gone through a bankruptcy and a divorce. And so I was getting ready to move into an apartment. My brother said, no, 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 you're going to come live with me. There is no arguing about this. You're going to have a bunch of legal bills, and you're just going to live in my basement. I have a really nice room. I'll never see you. And so I was like, okay. And when my friend said, hey, I see the next big thing is podcasting, and I heard about membership sites, I had just seen so many things that I go, oh, I should jump on that. Oh, I should jump on that. You know, I remember when I graduated from high school, everybody's like, you should move to California. There's a part of me that's like, that would have been fun. You know, maybe Dave would have ended up in Poison or something like that. But I was like, ah, that's not me. I remember I uploaded a file and I saw it come down in the software. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. I see what podcasting is. And it really was like, oh, this could be very cool. And then 2 weeks later, a guy sent me a voicemail from Nuremberg, Germany. And I went, oh, wait, hold on. Whatever flag was around, I grabbed the podcasting flag and I'm like, I claim this in the name of Dave. So there was a part of me that I think it was, it's like, okay, I'm feeling down. I don't know where I'm going from here. And I'd seen other things pass by and I was like, okay, let's do something different. What's the worst that could happen? And so I was like, all right, I'm jumping in. I kind of do that a little more than I used to. I'm deathly afraid of heights, but I went up in a hot air balloon. You know, I did stand-up comedy a couple months ago that went okay. So I'm much more up for trying something different, because I always say, look, you're either going to end up succeeding at whatever you're trying, or you're going to end up with a really good story. And I like having stories because I tend to work them into my show. And if I just sit in this room all day, well, there's no stories happening here except maybe via email or something like that, or interviews like this one. So I try to get out and do things a little more.
Dave, you don't try to work stories into your show. Your show is nothing but analogies. Nothing but stories.
I'm the analogy king. When I was married, I remember once I was in an argument with my now ex-wife, and I said, it's kind of like, and she said, can you not just say what this it is? Do you have to, you know, do this stuff? So yeah, I am the analogy king.
You know, we were talking about technology and you mentioned the microphone, and I laugh because we on this show interview people behind the scenes of the music industry, and it could be anyone from a guitar tech all the way up to a music producer or even the artists themselves. And I always laugh because the producers and the engineers who come on the show, they're in a, you know, multi-million dollar recording studio with all the gear behind them, and they're using their laptop and the laptop mic. It's the worst sounding thing ever.
Yes.
And it just makes me laugh every time. But I mean, they've got all that equipment sitting right next to them and they just don't use it. So on a note like that, I know what the challenges a beginner may face, but what challenges do you face at your point in the career?
I think like everyone else, we want to have more people listening. For whatever your why is, it makes you feel good when you see that, wow, last week there were 20 people and now there's 25. And that is just something that to grow your audience, you have to get in front of people who don't know who you are, but should. And so I'm lucky enough that I get to go to these different podcast events. And in many cases, I actually get to talk, and I've started taking pictures. I'll just start off. I'm like, hey, I've got an extra layer of skin. You're not offending me. I need to know. If you have no idea who I am, and if you never listen to my show, if you could please raise your hand. And then I take a picture, like the last one at PodFest. I'm going to say 3/4 of the room had no idea who I was, which A, I love, because now I get to make a first impression. But B, I was like, and I turn around, I go, this is how you grow your audience. You get in front of people who don't know who you are. And so that can be tough when all you have on Threads and X and Instagram are people that kind of know you already have a podcast. And so I always say, if you can, look at your followers as your sales team. So instead of saying, hey, another episode of the, you know, podcast review show is out, just say, hey, this week we interviewed Ralph from AskRalph.com and find out what we thought of his show or whatever. Give them a little more like it's a marketing material. Now, hey, in this week we talked about the Beatles. You know somebody who likes the Beatles? You might want to share this with them, that kind of thing. So that is a strategy. But even when it works, social is a trickle. Paid ads are a trickle. It's just, you know, being on other people's show, it's a trickle, but if you're filling a swimming pool, six hoses versus one will make it fill up faster. So that's where in a microwave society, when we're used to, you know, I want my Hot Pockets in a minute and a half, and you're like, yeah, it might take you a couple of years to build an audience. Nobody wants to hear that, but it's somewhat the truth.
Well, it's absolutely the truth, right? I mean, it takes time. It's like anything else. It's like being in a band. I mean,
absolutely.
It's building awareness. That's all it really is.
Yeah. And I mean, you start in the basement, you work on your craft, then you finally get your first gig, and that first gig leads to another one. And the last band I was in, we ended up playing a couple fairs in front of a couple thousand people. And you're like, man, this is a long way from the basement. But that didn't happen overnight.
No, not at all. I mean, not at all. I mean, I remember playing, like you said, in basements and garages. I mean, to the audience of maybe one friend. And that one friend is like, can we leave now? So, I mean,
nice.
It happens.
I played a bar and there were six people counting the staff. So there are like four people in there. And we said, hey, it's a paid practice. And we still performed and put everything we had into it. And one of the guys there was like, hey, I want to hire you for my birthday party. And we're like, okay. And that ended up being like one of our most profitable gigs because he bought us out of merch. We had a lot of merch. And it was crazy. And that then gig led to a lot of other people. So you never know who's listening or whatever. I hear that a lot. I can't believe that the CEO of this company contacted me about my podcast. I'm like, you don't know who's listening. So give it everything you got.
No, you don't. And you mentioned earlier somebody from Germany listening to your show. The largest place outside of the U.S. for us is Australia. We get a lot of people from Australia reaching out. It's funny to me.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we're talking about social media and the challenges of social media, and it is a trickle. I mean, it really is. But where are you having success? Where do you spend the most time on social media?
Part of it is just I go where I want to go. So Dave has gray hair. Of course he's on Facebook. So that's one of them. Twitter, although I was just there tonight, and I had not been there for a while, and there were some things that were really disturbing. Somebody had posted a tweet of some guy that had beat the snot out of his wife, and I don't know what the account was. It was something like the world we live in. And I mean, it was disturbing, and there was a lot of that going on, like just weird, disturbing videos of people beating each other up. And I was like, well, I don't want to look at that. No. So I may be done with my favorite new term for Twitter, and I heard this at Podfest. We are now calling it Twitter. And I was like, that is so good. I like that. So I need to be, this is the one that's driving me nuts. I need to be on LinkedIn. I know that. Everybody else like, well, why don't you do stuff on LinkedIn? And I cannot give you a good answer besides I try it. I need to kind of learn. I guess that's it. There's like, I know how to post on LinkedIn. I do occasionally, but I need to spend time over there seeing what other people are doing, because just because it works on Instagram doesn't mean it's going to work on LinkedIn. But that makes more sense because there are businesses over there that should be using a podcast to market their company. And I interviewed an Instagram guru a couple months ago, and he's got a course. And I was like, you know what? I should just bite the bullet. And instead of drudging through the learning curve of what works, just ask somebody and pay him some money for his time. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I get that too. But there's others, like you mentioned Instagram earlier. I don't really have much success on like building a large audience on there, but they're very engaged followers. Sometimes I think that's a little bit more valuable, even on, I've been calling it Twix, but either way, I've noticed lately my following has gone up quite a bit just recently over the past 6 months. I've been trying to engage in it more like everybody else. I try to go on there and communicate and engage with people, but it just takes time. It takes time to build that following like it does any other.
Yeah, I think the thing I get the most engagement from is my newsletter, which I try to put out weekly, but it's more like three times a month. There's usually a week where I'm like, Friday came and went and I missed it. But I will get feedback from people like, hey, that was really cool. And once you email me, I'm going to be like, oh, thanks so much for the kind words. Anything you'd like me, if it's a newsletter, anything you'd like me to write about in the future, any topics that you're struggling with, because now I've got a conversation going. And I've had people actually join my membership site from that. So it's the dumbest newsletter ever. It's usually like a paragraph, if that, like, here's what I've been up to. I got back from Podfest and I was tired and I can't believe I used to stand for 8 hours as a teacher, and now if I stand for four, I'm knocked out and blah, blah, blah. And then it's just, and here's what I've been up to. Link to the episode. Link to an episode. Here's what caught my eye. Some weird product or whatever. And then here's what's coming in the future. And that's it. And I've had people say, I love your newsletter because it takes me like 5 minutes tops to read it. And I'm like, okay.
And it gives you insights.
Yeah, it was just something that I was like, well, this is all I can do right now. And so my last one was a little longer because I was kind of doing a power rant on, I just keep running into people that want a podcast for free. And I was like, look, you find money for Susie's braces and the new roof and the car needs repaired. And like, we all find money for important things. And sometimes hobbies are important to keep your sanity. So why are you trying to do podcasting? Look, I get doing it on the cheap, but these are people that want to do it for absolutely free. And that just, like, every, if you're going to be a runner, you have to buy shoes. So that was the last newsletter was a little more of a rant, I think, than anything. So it was a little more than a paragraph.
That's awesome. You talked about your newsletter and you try to get it out weekly. And that's a good point for consistency, like the newsletter, the shows. How do you find the balance between your newsletter and the 20 plus shows?
Yeah, what I usually do when I'm consistent is I need to, and I kind of recognize it and I lie to myself. If I go, ooh, that's a cool thing, I should go over and put it in the newsletter. So right now I'm using Substack because that's the one I'm not, I mean, I'm kind of doing marketing, but it's really more, I want to communicate with my audience. And so I was playing with it and I'd be like, oh, here's something that caught my eye or whatever. And then I just save it as a draft. And so when Friday rolls around, I go over and I massage whatever's there. And then like, okay, that's what I got. Here we go. And it's out. What drives me nuts is I'll see something and I'm like, oh, that's a good one for the newsletter. And then 4 hours later, I'm like, wait, what was that thing again? And then you're searching through your search history or whatever you saw. And I'm like, I knew I should have just stopped, either put it in a Apple note or Evernote or what. I'm like, I should have written it down and I didn't. So it's easy when I recognize that and go, write this down. And then, you know, you'll expand on it later. So there's that. And it's weird if somebody said, what is your workflow? This week, I'm going to publish an interview with Gary Arndt that I did probably a month ago. So I kind of go with whatever I have the most of. So if I had to do a solo show right now, and this is the other struggle, how do you come up with something new when you have 918 episodes? Right. So that is something I have come to the conclusion that it can't be absolutely new. In some cases it is, something happened in the news or whatever, but many cases it's, hey, like I've done imposter syndrome, I think twice. Once was kind of like for the average Joe. And I was like, hey, here's a list of like 9 celebrities that have imposter syndrome. So it was the same topic with kind of a different slant. And so that's where, again, writing down ideas, I don't know about you, I get a lot in the shower because I'm just focusing on breathing.
Your brain's off.
Yeah. So I often will write those down. And about the time I think I have nothing, I don't know what I'm going to do this week, I'll open up Evernote. And I'm like, oh, wow, there's like 15 ideas here I could just riff on for 20 minutes and call it a day. And then from there, the teacher and me, because the first thing you have to do when you're teaching a class is when the student leaves, they will be able to blank. Like, what is the objective of the class? So it's like, okay, when somebody gets done listening to this, what do you really want them to know? And a couple of years ago, I used to have 4 bullet points and I would just riff into the microphone and then later expand on those to make what most people call show notes. Well, now I do the opposite. I'm like, let's figure out what I'm really trying to say. And so I'll write a blog post and then take that and boil it down to 4 bullet points and talk to my invisible friend across the desk. Before, I was just starting off with the bullet points. I hadn't really thought it through. And so I'd be taking these weird tangents and I was like, ugh. Or I'd be uploading the file as I'm writing the show notes and go, oh, you know what I should have said there? So I'm just taking a little more time up front to figure out what the heck am I really trying to say? What do I want them to understand? What do I want them to feel? That whole 9 yards. And as a creative person, that's the part I love. You know, people go, why do you use sound effects? I go, because there's a part in my brain that said, this would be kind of funny to have somebody go, ha ha, here or something. I'm like, it's just whatever it is.
That's funny. You're talking about all this stuff, and I can see the teacher in you because you're definitely a coach. Everything is based on the foundation of teaching something.
Yeah.
And as you're talking about teaching, you're mentioning the practice of putting your lesson plan together. yeah. and then you deliver it. And by doing that planning up front, you're saving yourself production time later on down the line.
Yep.
How much time do you put in editing after the fact?
Good question. Hopefully not a ton. If I've really thought out what I want to say, because I don't want to read my blog post. That's no, sorry, no way. But I would say if I record for 40 minutes, probably 40 minutes by the time, and that's editing it, that's, you know, adding a little EQ, making some transition music. I have some dynamic content in my show that is brilliant and yet somewhat a pain in the butt, where I have to go in and you have to figure out where that's going to go. Like, where's the question of the month going to go? Oh, it's here. And then I have to make a little mark so that later when I'm in Libsyn's back end, I'm like, wait, where's the question? Oh, it's at the 35 minute, 42 second mark. Okay, here, that whole nine yards. That kind of takes things up. Some of my shows, like the podcast rodeo show, is simple because my show notes are their description, a link to their website, what I liked about the show and what I didn't. So that show is another one. That was a test show. I started that show because I wanted to play with Captivate. And I was like, I don't have time for another podcast. I don't have any time to do a podcast. And I was like, I need a podcast I can just do off the top of my head. And so that show takes me about 45 minutes to do maybe a 10-minute show. And I've always said, on my best day, the best ratio I can get to is 4 to 1. So if that's a 10-minute show, it's going to take me about 40 minutes. And it just, you know, you got to type this up. You got to edit this out. Oh, this audio sounds like.
Short shows take just as long as long shows.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So for all those people that want to do a 3-hour Joe Rogan show, now to their, I don't know if it's credit, but there are a lot of people that'll do 3 hours and then not edit it. And I'm like, so let me get this straight. There are movie editors, TV editors, book editors, magazine editors, newspaper editors, but your show is perfect. Excellent. Yeah. Good luck with that.
I go through those battles too. And I did, you know, talk to my wife about it a lot because editing takes time out of what family time would be, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you got to manage that schedule and find the times to do it, even if it is, you know, 10 o'clock at night on a weekday, just to do it when people are sleeping.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of things that we do to accommodate those.
Yeah. That's why I asked the podcast coaches Saturdays at 10:30, because when I was married, my ex-wife was still asleep.
Right.
If I had it at 11, she'd be up, or noon or whatever. But I was like, all right, we'll do it while she's asleep.
Well, let's talk about the rodeo show for a second, because
yeah.
you somewhat recently just had a little bit of a challenge with the show and you almost considered shutting it down. Can you talk about the challenge you went through and, you know, how it affected you?
Yeah, it really kicked me in the stomach. This woman said, hey, can you listen to my show? And I'm like, sure. So I put it on and she started off just making a list of these horrible things that had happened in her life. Her sister had died. She'd been sexually assaulted and all this stuff. And this is literally like, hi, and I don't remember what her name was. I'm Misty. And I've done this, and I'm like, wait, what's the show about? I don't understand. And I just said, I'm really sorry to hear that you've gone through these things. Those are horrible. But what's the context? I don't get it. I just feel bad now. And she came at me and like, you are a horrible person, and you're discouraging me, and all this other, just everything as a teacher you do not want to hear. And I went back and listened to my shows, and I was like, yeah, I am kind of. There are times when I'm a bit of a, it's a little harsh to quote Bill Murray. And I actually thought of just quitting. I'm like, this is a show that's supposed to hopefully want people to work with me. And if I'm coming across as a jerk, well, that's not really doing what I wanted to do. And so I put it out to the audience and I said, hey, like, what do you guys think? And they all went, oh, you're saying everything that everyone else is thinking. You just have the courage to say it. And I'm like, okay, because I don't want to be like a shock jock or whatever. But that was one, it really did knock me back, because I don't ever want to discourage anyone or make them feel bad. So that was just one. And so my audience is like, I don't know what she's thinking about. I agree with you. That was a weird show. And I was like, okay. And I still, to this day, try, and it's literally like 30 seconds. It's, I call it a first impression, but I take little notes on a post-it note and I'm like, okay. And I'll make notes, but I always try to start off with, well, the good news is, if you ever hear me say, the good news is there are a lot of people that are still thinking about launching a podcast and you actually launched one. I can always find that as something good. But I mean, I just had somebody a couple months ago found a typo in the name of my show. You can always get somebody to get an outside point of view and find something. So that's all I'm trying to do. I'm just trying to help people do that. One of my favorite pet peeves is it seems like every religious show, someone in the first 3 minutes is going to ask you for money. And I'm like, you do realize that's a negative stereotype that you are now pushing out into the world. I'm like, can we please quit trying to sell the Jesus hanky in the first 90 seconds of the show? You're driving me crazy with that.
Well, I listen to the rodeo show and I enjoy it. And like you say, it's edutainment, right? I mean,
yeah.
So you're educating and entertaining, and there's a balance to keep up with the two of those. But I don't think you ever cross a line. I think you point out the obvious, but then you always follow it up with how you can fix it.
Yeah, and that's it.
As long as you're following up with the how you can fix it part, there is an element of entertainment. You have to understand that.
Yeah.
So with that said, and that show and the others that we've mentioned throughout the night, do you have any favorites?
Boy, that's a good question. I think probably the School of Podcasting. For me, the School of Podcasting, like I have a friend of mine that I mentioned, I've known him since I was in sixth grade, and he's going to be in town next week. When you have that conversation with an old friend, you're super comfortable with it. And so that's one I just feel like and I know who I'm talking to, Ken Blanchard, Kim Craggy, I'm talking to you. You know, I kind of have an idea of who's listening. And so I typically have, I hope so at least, have something I'm excited to talk about. And there's so many things changing and moving in the podcasting space. I rarely kind of have that, time to make the podcast kind of thing going on. I'm usually pretty happy about it. And to me, it's just, maybe because it's, you know, we keep calling it the flagship, but it is. It's kind of like, I got to bring my A game on this, because I do have shows that are test shows that, like, here, I'll give an example. I have one called podcastingresources.net, and that's just me playing with Buzzsprout. It's not a very good show. It's me basically reading the ad copy of some sort of product that I found, and I'm like, okay, but I, like, if somebody said, what's your best show? I'm like, I'm not doing that one, you know, so, The School of Podcasting is one that I've put some time and thought into.
I could tell you my tops. I like the School of Podcasting. It's probably my favorite, and just because it comes across as the flagship show. And I think anything that you're going to discuss on your other shows is typically discussed on the School of Podcasting.
Yeah.
So if I'm going to catch any, that's the one I want to catch.
Yeah, I always tell people, if you can only pick one, that's the one, because usually everything ends up there.
Yeah, I like Ask the Podcast Coach. However, caveat, I watch it on YouTube. I don't listen to it as a podcast.
There you go. You get all the fun mistakes and non-edits. Right. That's great fun.
I like the podcast review show because I think the chemistry, like you have with Jim, you also have with Eric. And then, of course, the rodeo show. So I would say those are my top four.
On the podcast review show, Eric is kind of the content guy and I'm kind of the tech guy. But obviously, Eric knows some tech stuff and I know some content stuff. But the thing I also love about it is we occasionally don't agree on stuff. So that's always kind of fun. So I'm really, we've got one coming up this Saturday. We're recording one. I'm going to be interesting to see, because there's something about this show that I'm like, that's just not a good practice. So I'm dying to hear what Eric says. So that's kind of fun. And that's, again, going back to the days of Siskel and Ebert, when you have two different opinions, it makes it interesting to see, okay, are they going to duke it out? Are they going to agree, or what's going to happen?
That's really cool. I'll look forward to that episode. While we're talking about all these episodes and these 20 plus shows and podcasting since 2005, being in the Hall of Fame, all of these things that you've done and the accomplishments that you've made, do you have any memorable moments that stand out?
Well, the Hall of Fame was one that I didn't see coming. My buddy Gary Leland called me up. He's like, hey, we need some help with the Hall of Fame, because at this point they'd had, I think, one or two round of inductees. And I'm like, oh, cool, whatever I can do to help. He's like, all right, we need you to pick up a trophy. And I'm like, pick up a trophy? Okay, where is it at? And he's like, no. He goes, you're getting a trophy. And I was like, oh, okay. And that actually kind of messed with my head. When I got home and I went to hit record, I was like, is this Hall of Fame material? So it kind of messed with my head for a while. And I was like, look, I got in there being myself. I just need to be myself.
Continue so being yourself, yeah.
That was one. And then I had a guy send me a note and basically said he was going to commit suicide, but he heard an episode where I said sometimes having a podcast can give you kind of a
purpose,
yeah. And he had heard my show, decided not to kill himself, and he credited me for saving his life. And that's back when I was, you know, by the water heater, and I was just thinking, wait, what? I'm like, I'm here talking about bandwidth and microphones. Yeah, I never expected anything like that. And I've talked to other podcasters. I have a friend of mine, Ken Blanchard, and he's got a military background, and he's a pastor, and he does a show called Speak Life Church. And at the end, he's like, oh, just remember, I love you, and there's nothing you can do about it. Well, because he talks about his life, he gets more of a military people listening because they can relate to some of his stories. And he said, man, I've had five people. He goes, one guy was literally on the ledge. He goes, I'm not trained for that. But, you know, it's one of those where you're down by the dryer and your wife's like, honey, dinner's on. And you're like, yeah, I might be a second. I gotta talk somebody off the ledge. So that was one. And what's kind of interesting about that is he was going to commit suicide on Halloween because that was his favorite holiday. And he had his phone number. So I called him on Halloween and I said, hey, man, what's going on? This is Dave Jackson. He goes, no, it's not. And I'm like, no, seriously, it's Dave Jackson. He's like, wow, okay, what's going on? I'm like, oh, I just got to make sure you're okay. I go, dude, I need all the listeners I can get. I can't have people offing themselves. And I've called him pretty much every Halloween since then. There was one year I forgot. We caught up on Thanksgiving. But I just touched base with him to see how things are going. He's a great guy. So it's just one of those things that, you know, side effects. I've been hired a couple times for different jobs. So you never know who's listening and you never know what it's going to lead to. But my bumper sticker is, podcasting lead to relationships and relationships lead to opportunities. And those opportunities lead to more relationships, which lead to, you guessed it, more opportunities. And if you just don't quit, you'll probably have a good time.
Well, I have to ask you, finish the sentence, because of my podcast.
Oh, man. Well, I work for Libsyn. I've been hired at Chancellor University. This sounds like a humble brag. I got hired to be the head of the podcast track at a thing called the New Media Expo. And at the time, it was one of the biggest events about podcasting and video and blogging and all this stuff. The head guy called Spreaker and said, who do you think would be a good guy? And they said, Dave Jackson. Then they called Todd from Blueberry. And he said, I don't know, what about Dave Jackson? And then they called the guys from Libsyn. And I didn't work there yet. And they said, what about Dave Jackson? So it's kind of your digital resume in some ways. That's your podcast. So that's happened. And again, this sounds like a weird humble brag, but when I go to these different events, I've gone to really small towns in some cases to talk. And I'll have somebody email them like, wait, you're coming to, you know, Poughkeepsie, whatever. And they'd be like, can I take you to dinner? So I'm like, okay, sure. And it's always like, I tell my family like, hey, in the event I disappear, look up, you know, Bob Johnson or whatever, because he's, you know, I'm in the back of his trunk or something. You never know. But that's always fun. And it's interesting to have people go, like, I had a guy come to Akron. I would say, if you come to Akron, I'm buying you Luigi's Pizza. And so I took him out for pizza. It was a great time. And he had remembered my musician show. And he said, do you remember what you used to say at the end of every show? And I go, dude, I don't remember what I had for breakfast, let alone what I said in 2005. And he said, you used to end the show with, for anyone who has money, there is therapy. For the rest of us, there is music. And he goes, I now teach music at a university. And he goes, I open up every semester with that quote. And I was like, wow, okay. I'm like, that is kind of, I'm like, did I say that? That one's not bad. I'm going to write that down. So yeah, I mean, you've got another hour I could go on because of my podcast stories. I've got friends all over the world and it's been a lot of fun.
That's awesome. I want to get in on that pizza, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Yeah, you're right down the street.
That's what I'm saying. Just throwing that out there.
4-hour drive, you know, maybe we'll meet in Columbus. I'll bring some. It might be a little cold. We might have to reheat it a bit.
There you go. Well, we do this thing here we call Unsung Heroes, where we take a moment to shine the light on somebody who works behind the scenes or somebody who may have supported you along the way. Is there anybody you'd like to shine a little light on, say a little thank you to?
Oh, man, that's a really good question. I would say the first name that popped in my head was Rob Walsh. Rob and I, along with Gary Leland, we did a show called Today in Podcasting. I forget. It's many, many moons ago. And like a big story would be like, wow, Whirlpool started a podcast. Like now everybody has a podcast. But back then, anybody embracing podcasting was new. And so I kind of knew him from Libsyn. And then I got to know him a little more through that show, so that when my last teaching gig in the corporate world fell apart, I was like, man, I'd really love to have a job in podcasting. And at that point, I'd been podcasting for 10 years. And I had Rob's phone number. And I just called him up and I said, hey, you want to have an awkward conversation? And he's like, sure. And I'm like, okay, great. I got bad news and good news. And he's like, oh, I'll play. What's the bad news? And I go, I just lost my job. And he goes, okay. And the good news is, I said, I can come to work for you now. And I go, I told you this might get awkward. And he goes, no, no. He goes, I don't want to say I'm glad to hear you lost your job. He goes, but like, what are you doing the rest of the day? And I go, I literally just lost my job, probably laundry, you know.
And crying, he goes, in the corner.
Yeah. Yeah. And he goes, would you be available to talk to, you know, the president if I can get her on the phone of Libsyn? And I'm like, I'll talk to anybody. Sure. Whatever it takes. And I'm literally driving home doing a phone interview with the president of Libsyn. And so I get to go to these events. Now, granted, I have to stand at a booth and explain that Libsyn is short for Liberated Syndication 500 times. But it's the networking at night when I'm not standing behind a booth that has led to so many opportunities. And that wouldn't happen unless I knew Rob Walsh. So he's definitely been somebody that I need to go, hey, thanks, buddy, because he's definitely opened the doors for a lot of fun things.
A big thanks to Dave for taking the time to share his stories with us. And thank you for taking the time to hang with me here. I really do appreciate it. Please follow, share, and connect on all the socials. You could even tell a friend. I'd appreciate that, too. You can do all this and find the links to everything mentioned over at jfranzi.com/episode53. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to The Jay Franzi Show. Make sure you visit us at jfranzi.com. Follow, connect, and say hello. This episode has been brought to you by VR Knives, your source for 100% custom knives made by a true rock star. So, if you're in the market for a new piece of art, reach out to VR Knives. 407-421-5528. 407-421-5528.